I think many of you are, like myself, appreciative of the fine supper we had. If I could capture the enthusiasm of a five-year-old who was processing by me to show his friends the incredibly large slice of watermelon that he had found or been given, there was a kind of exuberance that his face, his whole demeanor, and his bragging and boasting to his friends conveyed about the abundance of watermelon that was part of that supper. And I want to thank you for taking this evening slot to come in from outside on a really lovely late afternoon, early evening. A number of you have been straight through these sessions, and I want to say we're going to shift gears a little bit. It's part of the Holden privilege of learning from some of the other presenters, but also the rhythm of the week. And we're going to, I want to go in the direction of even more small group participation. And so if you're new this evening, you are an added benefit because some of us have talked enough amongst ourselves. We are eager to hear your input now on this topic of discipleship. A theme that will weave in and out of our conversations, I'm not promising that it will always be tightly woven this evening, is neighborliness. And to provoke our thinking, I put the question, who is my neighbor and how would they know this? And we'll see over the next hour whether that's a question we can give some shape and form to. I also want to step back and return to a definition of discipleship that I put before the group on Monday and have us talk just a little bit more tonight about this definition. And again, if you're new, you get to join that conversation with us. And that's where we're going to begin. Discipleship has a kind of rocky history as a concept, as a term, and I would say even as a way of life in our culture. And when I say our culture, I mean generally North American culture, but I know I have Canadian sister and brother here, so maybe not knowing very much about Canada, maybe I just should say in the USA, the parts of the upper Midwest that I know best. But we'll see if it could be a North American conversation. And partly that some tensions around the language, the concept of discipleship, is that it has not been dominant language in Lutheran and most other liturgically grounded communions. It has been more the vocabulary of those who would describe themselves as more conservative theologically or evangelical in one sense, descriptor. Or those, I think even in the charismatic community, there would be more often conversations about discipleship. I think it's very important that in the widest sense, more Christians enter the conversation. And so whatever your own experience has been of discipleship, like I have no idea what it is, or yes, I have a regular practice of discipleship, know that you're entering, you're a welcome part of this discussion. Let me share the definition here, and then we're going to talk through a couple of the images, and from there we will drill down more deeply into one way of thinking about discipleship by looking at the concept of neighborliness. Discipleship is a way of life in which we point to the gospel of Jesus Christ with the whole of our lives, and then tonight I've added, for the sake of the world. Using a hyphen because I realized my high school English teacher wasn't here and I could get away with the hyphen. A couple of things I want to say, and then I want to ask what improvements, what changes, what questions you want to raise, because it's a whiteboard and we can mix and match and erase and add on there. I want to say I actually believe discipleship happens sometimes when we step back and take a very careful look at a concept. We almost talk ourselves out of believing that there could be any examples. We think of all the caveats we want to say around the edges, and pretty soon the whole concept disappears. I actually believe that I have caught some of you practicing discipleship in my presence, in the time that I've been at Holden Village. So I actually believe in the concept that it is something. I also know that it will be important this evening and in tomorrow's session as well to talk about some things that discipleship is not, partly because of that broader conversation across the Christian community. Way of life is actually a phrase I chose to honor people like Dorothy Bass and Craig Dykstra and Chris Sharon and Martha Stewart, who have been very deliberate in their use of that phrase to talk about not simply discipleship as something we have inside our heads, but a way that we configure our life, therefore being a way of life. And the particular image I've chosen is to say that we point. And what I mean, some of this, if you came to the Krana art display that Dave and Sandy did earlier this week, if you were in the village, a couple of the paintings, or at least one, showed John the Baptist pointing to the cross. And that's the gesture I mean, the pointing to another, away from oneself to another, and also that sense of pointing others, serving as a signpost, as some people did when I've been out wandering around and a little lost as a newcomer. People have pointed me toward my intended destination. And so I choose the phrase, point to the, we're going to talk a bit about the gospel of Jesus Christ this evening. If I can just go a little further, with the whole of our lives is a way to say a discipleship isn't just for Sunday morning or Sunday evening if you're in a congregation that meets at 4:30 or 5 or 5:30. It's about the whole of our lives, the whole of the week, through all the seasons and experiences of our human life. And I wanted to add this evening, for the sake of the world, because it can be tempting for me, and therefore I suspect for you as well, or for others, to sometimes be so focused upon my own life as a disciple that I get really turned in on myself. The last thing I actually want to do as a disciple. But that for the sake of the world would be a concept that I want to draw us toward. Just on the level of definition, questions you want to raise or things you would add to this or things you would erase?
Well, I think once you identify yourself as a Christian, that's a choice for an adult. In my worldview, or I don't know, you call it a theology, then how you live is your discipleship. And you may not be a good disciple, or you may be a, I mean, however you live is your discipleship, no matter what that is.
So that our, and again, we'll come back a little bit to that language of choice, but Sonny, thank you for putting your claim on that. In a sense, our lives give witness to something, and it's either a really excellent example of discipleship or a pretty weak or a pretty muddled, but our whole life does speak. Very helpful. Please.
I'm a little uncomfortable with pointing to the gospel prior to living for the sake of the world. Seems like that we're really called to live for the sake of the world, and maybe the motivation for doing that for us is the gospel, but someone else need not know that.
Let me see if I've caught what you're saying. We could take this phrase, and we're not going to worry if we have quite all the right language on this. Discipleship is a way of life for the sake of the world, in which we might also be publicly pointing to the gospel. Would that get at what you're saying, or do you want to refine it?
And our whole lives, obviously,
yeah.
Not just speaking or everything that we do.
And I want to thank you, because that's pretty provocative to move the world way up. People want to respond to what it's Chaz?
Yeah.
What Chaz has said?
Makes sense to me.
Want to say more about why? Why and what's at stake?
Well, I think discipleship and following Christ is not for us, primarily, it's for Christ primarily.
And so in a definition, it'd be helpful to get that right up on the top line, okay? Others want to comment on that or go in some other ways, please.
Or even if our identity is somehow in the community with the church, people make assumptions about you because of that before they even know you or what you're about.
Right, yeah. We are known,
I mean,
by the...
I'm new yeah. to a community, and my husband is a pastor, yeah. So therefore I'm labeled as pastor's wife. And, you know, so there's already a whole list of things that people kind of assume about me, whether or not they're true.
We're known by the company we keep, and then the fun thing is whether we live up to people's expectations or just explode those and surprise them, in a sense, with who we are. Other comments you'd like to make? Bob?
Yes, there's some scripture, in particularly when Jesus says, live not for the world. Mm-hmm. That's inconsistent with the way we've rephrased this.
Mm-hmm. No, I think so.
Okay, Bob gets a chance to put a claim on the table, and then let's respond to it, because that's kind of fun. So, Jesus is saying
in this? Not of the world, I forget the exact
yeah.
phrase now. But
in the world, but not of the world.
In the world, but not of the world. Not of this world, but of the kingdom. The presence, the continuing presence of God in our lives through Jesus. And that is that's a different meaning than of the world, because the world is a corrupted place.
And so, in part, I think, Bob, if I'm hearing you correctly, we want to be real clear that we keep for the sake of, and not just some worldly kind of discipleship that might be crossing that line that you're pointing out to us.
But it may be for the sake of the kingdom of God.
Okay.
First, and then the world through that. The transformation of the world, if you will.
Very helpful. I think some people want to respond.
Well, I would say...
Let's start with Gary and then back to Michael.
I think the world is part of God's creation, so that is part of God. And in other world, I think it's not saying be informed by the world, be informed by Christ, and then transform the world.
Michael.
Yeah, one of the offertory prayers in the old LBW was talking about how we dedicate ourselves to the care and redemption of all that you have made. That's I think that's the sense of for the sake of the world.
But I rejoice that we could get some liveliness in the conversation, so thank you for going to bat for that perspective. Son?
You know, I agree a bit with the comment that we're supposed to be doing this for Christ first. But then there's that other, the other verse, I don't know where it is, where we're told to go out in the world and proclaim the gospel. Well, you know, most of us aren't ministers. We don't preach. And so if we go out in the world and proclaim the gospel, you know, that's got to be by how we live. You hold the door open for somebody. Do you give a ride to someone? Are you just pleasant, you know, when the line at the grocery store backs up and you can't get through? I mean, I think the proclaiming, and yes, caring for the world, obviously, there are a lot of other ways that you can proclaim, but in your simple everyday life, I think that's where you proclaim the loudest.
I'm going to take that and use that as the thread to move us a little bit forward. So, Sonny, thank you for giving me a little transition point. And again, I don't want to say we've finished discussion there, but let's see if we can go a little further together. Tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock, Michael is going to get to that phrase gospel, and I've been racing to get there ahead of you. Because I've learned so much in the Romans 1:1. Discussion. Some of you have also been there, and I know that I can just absolutely confident of this. Michael is gracious enough that he's going to welcome me tomorrow morning, no matter what I say tonight, and the same for all of you. Again, my definition, so you can have your own definition. It's me on the spot right now, up in the front. What's this business? What's this about? This gospel of Jesus Christ in terms of discipleship? Whether you're a pointer or a proclaimer, Sonny was actually suggesting a little bit different vocabulary there to proclaim a gospel. And again, I've written point two. What's this gospel? Somebody give it a try.
The teachings of Jesus.
Okay, it's going to be something that we've learned through Jesus in his teaching. What else can we say about the gospel of Jesus Christ?
If you want a textbook answer, in the confessions, the strict use of the gospel is the forgiveness of sins and justification on account of Christ. So living in the way of forgiveness.
And living in a way of, in response to an incredible action on God's part, because those are both God-driven events. Okay? Please.
I'm going to bring a different perspective because I'm a Methodist. Mm-hmm. And for us, the gospel, it's all about grace. Mm-hmm. There are only two commandments: love God with all your heart, all your soul, and love your neighbor as yourself. And in that, you're both accepting grace and you are emanating grace.
And I think some might say we're all saying the same thing. But we know this because of the teaching, not only the teaching in this formal sense of speaking, teaching, preaching of Jesus, but the life of Jesus. Well-stated textbook answer, thank you, Renita, about forgiveness of sins and justification by grace through faith alone. And then to have another member of our discussion join in and say, well, it's about grace. So, same discussion seen from different vocabularies and different places in the room. Anything else you want to say about the gospel of Jesus Christ?
Here. I think I'd say something about the infinite self-giving of God, which would be grace.
And so the direction of this is toward the other, on God's part.
God's infinite self-giving love.
Other things you'd want to add about gospel of Jesus Christ?
I think in the context of discipleship, example should be in there someplace. The example that Jesus presents in this scripture that we call the gospel.
I think part of others who have been champions of this vocabulary way of life would be picking up on the fact that it's a whole way of life that shows others that is the example. So I think if we had time to dig down even more deeply, you'd find that sense of example, first of all, God's action and the witness of Christ's life and our examples would all be hidden there.
This is along with the earlier part of the conversation too. I want to point out the we.
And Eric, why do you want to come draw our attention to that?
That it's something that's pointed to in community, in corporate action, and not simply something as an individual.
Right.
Not to cut that out in any way, but that there's a community element.
Discipleship has something to do with real people, but always in a communal sense. Sonny, let me turn that again to you, please.
It's just, that was exactly what I was sitting there thinking. In the sense of discipleship, Jesus created a community, and it was everyone within. It was everyone, and I think that's an important part of discipleship is that community, the creation of community, seeking to bring others into the community. I don't mean evangelism; I mean through the example of your life.
And some in this room might want to mean evangelism as part of that. I want to take a turn away from this, but a promise I made on the first day, I'm not deeply wed to this definition. I like some of the ways that it's being restructured. I also would invite you, if you want to write out a definition, that we can also take a look at multiple ways of a single sentence that would say what we mean by discipleship. But I want to put you to the test in a little different sense. I'd like to invite you in about groups of three or four, and nobody's counting, so if you're kind of small groups. What I'd like to do is give you 5 minutes as a group, because as Eric pointed out, this is very communal, to think of 5 things you do, what I will call life actions, so that we move just from concept to the whole putting one's person into something. 5 things you do or do differently because you are a disciple. And if you just turn to the people around you, try to overcome the front loader noise, and see if in 5 minutes you can come up with at least 5 things you do or you do differently than other persons because you're a disciple. I'm always aware that I'm interrupting at the right point because the volume goes just a little higher right before I think now we've got to come back as a large group, which means you were all on to something. I don't know that this evening we have time to hear everything from your groups, but from where I was standing, it seemed like a pretty engaged discussion. So let's share a few of those things that you came up with. We'll start right over here.
You know, we had a really lively discussion because one of our members does not identify as a Christian. And so what it really turned into, I think, was a discussion mm-hmm. of community, partly because mm-hmm. that's okay. the most important thing to me, and I'm real pushy. Yep. But as it turns out, everything that was said is about community. And Jay is mm-hmm. a member of a lot of communities, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. he is working on ecological mm-hmm. matters. And feels it really important to look at how others see things. Eric is very involved in a Christian group, or a group mm-hmm. because he's a Christian. And that intimate connection allows him then to go out in the world and to do other things and take other actions.
I was saying, I hadn't thought of it this way before, but because of a Christian identity, mm-hmm. I'm part of a community more than I would otherwise.
Apart from that.
That is a huge... Mm-hmm. That is something that being a Christian has totally changed my life as a community.
For all of us, it came down to caring, which was Penny's word.
Okay, so more of a discussion about community, yes. belonging, with engagement there because of yes. one's Christian identity, at least for Eric, and then caring. Let's hear from some other groups around the room. 5 things you do, one or two things out of the five, please.
Okay, in our group, one was prison ministry, ministering mm-hmm. to prisoners through worship and through providing meals in halfway houses. Another was mentoring to young people, to mm-hmm. kids. Another was through thrift stores, giving and participating in that. Another was corporate worship, mm-hmm. worshiping. And our fifth one was... giving food to the people within our community that are hurting. It's called like love in a dish.
Mm-hmm. Just let me check out language. When you say within the community, meaning within the wider community or within a congregation?
Within the congregation, okay. In this particular mm-hmm. Instance. Okay.
Lots of great examples, I think, and hopefully that enriches what other people were already sharing in small groups. Some other examples? Please.
Well, we talked about serving and various ways that we served, but one of the things that jumped out to me is I think that the life action is sort of living in gratitude. I think mm-hmm. that's that response to grace, is that you live in gratitude, and I think that that also is a connection with the community then. And then it was another person mentioned how important listening is as being a life of a life action that is affirming.
What I'm noting here, some of the language has been very action-oriented, a prison ministry, and some of it is attitudinal. And if your list had both, great, because I don't think you have to say, oh, no, we didn't have attitudes, we only... a way of life encompasses, when it's the whole person, it encompasses both attitudes and actions as well. Who has a surprising one? Are there some that have not at all been touched on? Or, Sydney, maybe not surprising, but one to share.
Well, what came up in our group was relational outreach, like that was mentioned, mm-hmm. listening, deep listening to someone in need. And then I look at it through the prism of parenting and mm-hmm. that edge, that radical notion that goes, it's so countercultural, and that you can ask your children, you know, to not only to not mm-hmm. gossip, but if their friends start to gossip, I mean, I actually ask my children to say, let's not talk about them, they're not here, or, you know, so it goes right up against that edge of specifically the way that you choose to have integrity.
Many households practice parenting. You're suggesting that as part of discipleship, some parents may practice that with a different angle of vision. And I think the group over here pressed me on an absolutely great question. When I first gave you your assignment, it was five things you do or do differently because you're a disciple. And I think, as a group wisely pointed out, it leads to different discussions. And Sydney, yours would be an example of do differently because of Christian commitments, because of being a disciple.
Different than some of my peers.
Mm-hmm. Please.
We also touched a little bit on do you have to be a disciple of Jesus Christ to do those things that are listed there?
No.
And so that goes to the differently part,
right.
I guess, or whatever. So, but you can be a good listener and not believe in God or Jesus.
Exactly.
And
that
I think
we got into that too.
Some of the excitement comes in that I wonder if there wouldn't be people in this room who could say, so-and-so, I've really learned this from so-and-so, and they are not a Christian in any way that I'm aware, but they have taught me what this means. So that discipleship isn't an exclusive claim on attitudes, or I imagine there could even be reasons to go to a prison. Families who have been touched by having somebody incarcerated could just decide that those are lonely months or years away and do some kind of prison visitation and not in any way claim that it was part of their discipleship, which I think, for me, is part of the excitement in the 21st century, because it isn't just that persons out of faith communities are engaging in activities and attitudes and a way of living of witness, but here, motivation, the force for this would be named, claimed differently by Christians. Please, Bob.
Yeah, another one we didn't mention in our group, but I think is an interesting one, is iconoclasm, and particularly attacking, for instance, our faith, the faith we put in the economy, armaments, violence, entertainment, and people who attack those things can also be revealing the presence of Christ in our lives as a source of strength that stands beyond the other things we usually put our strength in.
And I think back to that earlier very brief exchange about for the sake of the world or in the world. It doesn't mean to fit into the world or make it easy to be in the world, but things that are deeply and truly good for the sake of the wider world. In a Holden sense, maybe even to say for the whole creation, to use that language as more expansive even than the world. What I'd like to do is do some contextual theology with you. We've been doing a form of it, but we're going to do some communal contextual theology, or at least try it. Nothing like being a newcomer 4 days at Holden to say, let's talk about the Holden way of life. And while I'm doing that, this is an unrelated piece. It's a brief Bishop Hansen column from the Lutheran about faith practices. In many ways, your discussion time here was about faith practices, and that will give you some more reading to do. But at the risk of embarrassing myself once more in the presence of people who know a lot more about Holden Village than I do, let me just call it the Holden Way, and you might be thinking way of life. And I want to give a couple of examples and then invite you, either out of knowledge or out of being a novice as well, to think of some things that are done at Holden, and then we're going to talk about, well, what would be the faith practice? I have three I thought of that have just struck me in my first few days here. Every evening at Vespers, there are prayers for those leaving the community. And I've already learned the ritual. Is anybody here for the first night? Anybody here for the first time today? What do we do when somebody's leaving and they've all stood? We go, oh. That's a liturgical expression. So I want to say part of the Holden Way is prayers for those who are leaving, and it includes a genuine and expressive sigh before the prayer. A second thing I've noticed just blows me away. Day, night, any time, without added charge, I may have coffee, juice, toast, or cereal. I don't even have that at my house. And I travel a lot, and I know of no other setting where guests come and go where that access to the kitchen 24/7 is offered. So those are my two examples. How about some other things you know about the Holden Way? Please.
One of the first times I came, we were with three families and lots of young children.
Yeah.
And so what I was so impressed with is that we came and we watched the orientation. And the number of rules is really minimal. And so for us, it was a matter of saying, you cannot go to Railroad Creek alone. And about after that, really, other than that, it is do unto others as you would have done unto you.
Okay.
And that just jumped out at me.
Please.
Volunteerism. They don't... In fact, I don't know that anybody has said, it'd be great if you do something while you're here, but there are little signs and notes mm-hmm. around, and everybody sort of pitches in.
What I'm writing up here, if you can't read it, is but non-coercive about that. Some other things, the Holden Way. You're all living it. Contextual theologians, think about the rhythm of the day, the rhythm of the week. What's the Holden Way?
Intensive garbology.
Say more, because I haven't had my term yet. What does it mean?
The first time we were here, for some reason I was up above and saw every bed spring, every hot water tank that was used up in the building. Because what else are you going to do? Haul them down the lake to put in the landfill somewhere uh-huh. else? And it was that whole problem of used up stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so that whole, the practice of being exceptionally careful about what you use. And then recycling every shred that you possibly can. Because otherwise you're stuck with it.
So it may not only be the Holden Way, but it's something about geographic location has made something the Holden Way. Please, what have you noticed about the Holden Way?
Tangent on there, my hiking boots fell apart.
Yeah.
On the way back from Hart Lake. And so I asked somebody, said, we were at the kiosk, I said, is there anybody, can you put out the word, see if anybody has a pair of hiking boots I can borrow? Oh, go down to the potty room. Well, there's a room downstairs where people have left stuff, and there's coats and boots and shoes and socks and kids' clothes and stuff. She said, that's the Holden's Goodwill. And so just went down there and found a pair of boots that fit. Yeah.
Yeah. So you can.
There's not much tread on them, but they got ankle support. So that was so that I could go. Now I can still go hiking. It
okay.
Was really cool.
The Holden Way. Thank you.
There's an openness to strangers. Conversations that I've been in awe of. I mean, anytime I sat down next to somebody I don't know, people are.
Lenore, and I put down table. You probably meant more than just at tables, but even people you haven't met before, a chance to be in conversation. Please.
It's somewhat related to the praying, I suppose, mm-hmm. but there's a real interest in greeting newcomers coming in on the bus and bidding them farewell as they leave on the bus.
Study and inquiry.
Say a little more.
Sessions.
Okay. Study, which is actually a form of inquiry.
Yeah.
Okay, let's do one more. The Holden Way.
Well, people here are not paranoid in the way that the rest of the people in America are ever since 9/11, in which if I had left my bag in the airport, it would have been blown up by the time I got back to it. The assumption at this point is that every person who is around you is a potential bomber.
Yeah.
And so it affects the way that you relate to people on the street,
mm-hmm.
everywhere, because your thing is always be watchful. And in fact, they keep saying this over and over and over again in airports. You know, if you see anything out of the ordinary, if somebody asks you to hold something for them, please report them to the police immediately.
So different assumptions about the people we're meeting.
Different assumptions about the people here.
I think it's radical hospitality.
Okay, as the reason. Let me give Carol just a chance to enter in, and then we're going to move in the direction of what is this all about. The Holden Way.
Well, it's just, maybe it's just too obvious, but daily worship is the center of our life together. Mm-hmm. You can't leave out creativity, because this place is so creative.
What's neighborliness mean in this context? And I think many of you have given examples of what the neighborliness means. What's it mean to be a neighbor in this place?
Trust. Joy. Caring.
Sharing. Maybe I'm nuts, but I don't think it's hard. It's not like this is a place where, this is not the world. No, this is a pretty sheltered
So in some ways, this is in. There are some things are made easier in this contained community than in some other places. But it still takes commitments to have neighborliness be expressed in the way that it is here. But I think fair observation. Some of you are from home communities where this is a breath of fresh air, where it is much tenser around you all the time back home.
But part of the reason that there are few rules is that almost everybody here would have rules in their minds that are not even spoken. But there are rules about how to behave that are shared.
So it may be, some of these may express the kind of unique community that this is. I want to come back to what Carol said, because she's a director, so she can make this claim. Daily worship, did you say the center or the core?
I said center.
At the center of life. In terms of discipleship, does it make a difference if this is the center rather than Patricia's love for the 24/7 coffee and food, which is a pretty cool thing? I mean, I might want to say this is the center for me, but let's trust Carol on this one. Daily worship. What goes on if this is in fact the defining center for our common and shared life here?
Well, it's a constant reminder of our daily praise and worship and thanksgiving, which then makes it easier to come out under the mountains and see continue that on.
And in a sense, we don't go to, all of us, I believe, as we enter, go to a brief orientation. But this is a mammoth reorientation on a daily basis, Gary, to pick up on your image about who we are, whose we are, where we are, what we're doing here. Other things you want to say about Carol's claim that daily worship is the center? Please.
Put Christ and God as your center of your life.
Yeah.
Instead of behind each person.
The reason for doing
the hospitality, the reason for sharing, the reason for having 24/7 food, the reason for being able to hand out the hike stuff, it doesn't cost you anything, and the reason why people donate things so other people can use it, the whole, and you could be non-Christian in order to do that, but in this community, or even back home in congregational communities, that's what drives, I would imagine, the core things about who God is, and stuff, and wanting to be, the seeking out of being like God, and to thank God, and stuff, and also as that in this hospitality is being a witness and a testimony to anyone who comes, who is not Christian, or to Christians who call themselves Christians, but maybe they were baptized as a baby, but don't have, maybe that was it, you know.
So this speaks powerfully through all the other dimensions. Let's let Pastor Eric have a claim on this.
I was going to say, worship, just the word itself is a pretty general, kind of generic term. To sort of flesh that out a little more, what I think we aim for is that at the center of that time together is the hearing and thanksgiving for God's unconditional love. We say that in our mission statement, unconditional love in Jesus Christ, the sort of unfathomable gift of God, generosity, graciousness, reconciliation, forgiveness. And I think when that works, when that is the center of what we receive in that time together, then there's space for some of these other things to flow from that very particular center.
If I said it's the gospel center, would that make sense this evening, given the definition?
That's what we hope for.
Yeah, well, and that may be the other very important thing to say, not only about the Holden way of life, Patricia's way of life back home, the discipleship way of life. There is nothing about Christian faith that's about perfectionism. It's response and always reforming, always being called that. Some other comments on the Holden way.
Well, I was saying, even in terms of that call in the daily worship, however you, it's like, I think it's the call to the awe, the A-W-E, the awe. You're just like the awe as they leave, but it's called to the higher awe, not the awe.
Okay. And in just a little bit, we get to experience what that is. I want to make one more move this evening. I have enjoyed sharing literature with you, and we're going to do just one more reading, a portion, not the whole of the Catherine Patterson piece. And I want to say a little bit about why I use literature. I think it can help us sometimes come back to this very same conversations from yet another angle. And I'm going to invite two or three of you, if you're willing, otherwise two, and I'll be the third. We're going to read from a young adult novel called The Same Stuff as Stars, the way a writer who is profoundly, deeply grounded in her Christian identity, but would not say that she writes Christian books for young adults. She writes books for young adults, and an exchange that I hope would allow us to leave this evening thinking about some of the rougher places in life. In this particular story, Angel is 12 years old and has been in foster care. Catherine Patterson does not stray from the sort of tough issues of a child who dies in British Terabithia, issues around slavery and emancipation in some of her writings. And then in this one, the whole foster care system, what that's like when you're a 12-year-old. And the two characters we're going to hear back and forth, for those of you who haven't glanced at this ahead, are Angel, who's a 12-year-old, in a real pickle because her mother, she's currently living with her grandmother, she and her little brother, and her mother has appeared and taken the 5-year-old away. And Angel is worried about her little brother, worried about her mother, and the person she turns to is the village librarian. Your homework is to think about your home place. not Holden Village. This is our place apart for a little while, but back in our home ground. If someone was in real trouble back where you live, where could they turn? And I would encourage you to think beyond just churches and agencies. Who are those people, like Miss Irwin in this story, that a 12-year-old could turn to? So that we come again, and tomorrow morning we're back at 10:50, to think about neighborliness, not in this contained community of Holden Village, but to use this brief story to send us back to think a little bit about the places we live and what it means to be neighbors there. Who are those two bold readers? Great, you're going to read the green part. Come on up. And who else would be willing to be a reader? Great, you're going to have the yellow part. And if you have a copy of the, I forget what the title of the chapter is.
Consider the Heavens.
You're going to be green. You're going to be the librarian. And you're going to be Angel. You're going to use your best 12-year-old voice. That's all marked for you. Come on, come stand here for our little reader's presentation. And again, the question as we make the turn toward Vespers is, who is my neighbor and how would they know this? And friends, if you're following along, we're going to start on page 169. So flip over that front page to 169. And I'm going to be the narrator and start right here. Angel is walking in the door of the library. Funny, it was the thought of not buying sugar pops that burst the dam. She stood in the middle of the road and sobbed. Finally, she pulled a ratty tissue out of her pocket and blew her nose and wiped her eyes the best she could. Oh, Lord, they were nearly out of tissues. She'd have to buy more. She concentrated on making a mental grocery list so that by the time she got to the library, she was feeling, if not better, then at least not on the verge of exploding into a Mississippi flood.
Why, Angel dear, what on earth is the matter?
Miss Liza asked the minute she saw Angel's puffy face. So Angel blurted it all out, how Verna had come and taken Bernie away. Soon they were sitting side by side on the low children's chair in the picture book section. Miss Liza had her head bent sideways and her sharp little bird eyes on Angel's face, following every word of the long recital of events.
Well, I'd just like to know where he's at and that he's okay,
Angel said finally.
Of course you would,
Miss Liza said, handing her a fresh tissue.
So would I.
But we can't call welfare,
Angel said quickly.
They won't know where they are. But if they think Verna is acting crazy, they'll hunt her down and take him away.
Are you sure?
Well, they did it before.
Angel blew her nose.
She had a hard time getting us back.
She needed to remember that her mom, Verna, had fought like a wildcat to get them back. Bernie hadn't been much more than a baby the first time, and the last time welfare had put them in two different foster homes. Home, ha, more like a reformatory. Angel had gotten whacked every time she turned around. She told the social worker, too. She heard one of the social workers say that Bernie had cried the whole 2 months they were separated. Maybe that's why welfare gave them back to Verna in the end, because they'd made a mistake putting her and Bernie into bad situations. She didn't tell Miss Liza all this.
The other thing is,
Angel needed to word this carefully.
When Bernie doesn't show up at school on Monday, well, they may give it a few days, but then they're going to start calling and asking where he's at. Then what do I do?
That is a problem,
Miss Liza said.
Grandma, they won't talk to me, probably. Grandma can lie and tell them he's sick for just so long before they'll send someone out to investigate.
She wished she hadn't said that about Grandma lying, but Miss Liza didn't remark on it.
Are you thinking they might take you away then?
It doesn't really matter about me.
Yes, it does,
Miss Liza said.
I do need to stay on here for Grandma. You wouldn't believe what she eats when nobody's looking out for her, and she hardly gets out of her chair. She didn't get any exercise at all until she started walking Bernie to the bus stop and back. Now, well, if I'm not there to make her get out of her rocker, she really needs me.
Miss Liza smiled and patted Angel's knee with her crooked, brown-spotted hand the veins standing up like blue ribbons under the papery skin.
I've got an idea. It might not work.
She's scared I'll get my hopes up.
But I know the woman who is in charge of school libraries for the whole state. I'll ask her to find out if, that is, where Bernie is enrolled. I'll tell her he failed to return a library book of mine. Mm-hmm. That's actually the truth.
They go after kids not returning library books?
Of course not. But I'll say, and I won't be lying, it's an absolute fact, that he's got a book that's hard to replace, so that they ask about it.
Will that work?
Probably not, but I don't have a better idea.
She sighed and patted Angel's hand again. They sat there, hearing no noise but their own breathing, until the wind blew a branch clattering against one of the windows.
How's the stargazing going?
Okay, I guess. I'm learning a lot from your book. It really helps.
I miss it.
I can bring it back.
Oh, not the book. The sky.
Angel was confused.
The sky? How come it?
The sky wasn't like some overdue library book. It was always right there.
My silly back, she said. I can't turn my head up to see it properly.
Oh.
I can remember the stars. You mustn't feel bad for me.
They're so huge, so far away. Sometimes,
Angel said,
sometimes when I think of them, I feel like I'm nothing at all.
When I consider thy heavens, the moon, and the stars which thou hast ordained, what is man that thou art mindful of him?
Miss Liza was quoting something. Angel waited until she paused. She figured Miss Liza would explain.
It's from the Bible. The 8th Psalm. I used to recite that to myself when I was studying astronomy. What is man? And of course the writer means all of us puny little insignificant creatures. What is a mere human being that God, who made the immense universe, should ever notice?
She chuckled.
The sky does take you down to size.
Not even big as bugs. Not even a speck of dust to the nearest star.
Angel agreed.
But the psalmist answers his own question. Thou hast made him a little lower than the angels, and hast crowned him with glory and honor.
What?
Angel asked, not sure she had heard right.
A little lower than the angels, crowned him with glory and honor.
The real angels? Do you believe that?
Yes, Angel, I do. When people look down on me, and these days...
She laughed shortly.
These days, everyone over the age of 5 does. When people look down on me, I remember that God looks at this pitiful, twisted old thing that I have become and crowns me with glory.
Angel could hardly speak. There was pain in what Miss Liza said, terrible pain, but something else too. Something Angel knew only when she turned her face to the stars. An awesome stillness. What was the word? A glory? She left the library with 3 books and a heart too full to speak. In the grocery store, she bought what she needed, wondering if the clerk and the 3 customers who were in and out noticed anything different about her. She felt so different from the girl who had left Grandma's house an hour or so before. Couldn't they see a little streak of shining in her, a bit of glory Miss Liza had passed on to her? Even when the clerk asked the very question she's dreaded, "Where's your brother?" she looked her straight in her friendly round face and said,
"Oh, he's with my mom today."
She didn't even have to lie. What happens to neighborliness when it's not quite so easy or obvious about how to be a neighbor? That's the question. I want to invest in your night of thinking and sleeping and conversations between now and our next session. We're going to, tomorrow, as I said, we're after a coffee break, the session here. The theme will be pilgrimage. We're going to take some of today's conversation and see how it spills over into pilgrimage, which I think might be a good description of all of our lives in coming to Holden. If you would like something to read, we're not going to read them in the session, but I have a choice tonight, a menu. For those of you who want to read an astronomer's view of pilgrimage, there's an article called The Night Sky by Chet Ramo, and I'll put this over by the door. And for those of you who prefer a more fictional account, there's a chapter from Remy Rougeau's All We Know of Heaven. Both are about our quest for signs and signals as we go on our pilgrimage in life. Thank you for adding to the mix and the messiness of thinking about discipleship for the sake of the world. Come back and help us sort this out. We've got two more sessions, one tomorrow and then again on Saturday. Thank you.